Good morning. Today is Wednesday, March the 6th, Ash Wednesday. Joining us this morning, out of the 5th District, Mr. Madrone. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Are you ready for our Why Do They Say That?
Absolutely.
All right. Dander up. Why do we say a man who is angry gets his dander up?
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know. His hair follicles start activating, I guess.
Let's see. When a dog or cat is angry or alarmed, the hair on its back stands straight up.
Yeah.
So too, by analogy, will a person's. And when he's thoroughly aroused, according to this humorous phrase, his dandruff will stand up too. Mm. For dander is merely dandruff.
Okay, there's some wise words for
today.
Yeah,
getting your dandruff up. Okay.
I try not to let that happen.
Yeah, yeah. It's not been a concern of mine for some time.
And for our viewing audience.
Yeah, yeah. That's pictures available on the web. Don't worry about it. Oh, well, you must be kind of feeling, at least you know where the office is these days.
I know where the office is, and I know I've got a huge district. And
there
I
you go.
There's no incorporated towns other than the city of Trinidad in my district, so guess what? Who do they call?
It just makes fun for you.
Yeah.
Normally this time of the year, Steve, is the budget review, the midterm review, the governor comes out. You know, it's a little too early for the May revise, but kind of getting a general sense of, were the projections accurate? Were the projections off?
Right.
Are you starting to hear some of those rumbles and starting the next budget cycle process?
Absolutely. I think one of the big things is the sales tax revenues in Humboldt County dropped by 20% in 2018. That's a pretty big hit. And it's a clear anomaly. Did not happen in other counties around the state. So we know that it has everything to do with the cannabis industry and the...
Which is really kind of curious because you think about it, at least what you hear. Mm-hmm. What do I know, right? But what you hear is that the production is kind of the same. The illegals, though, are bigger. And those in compliance, there's not as many.
Yeah.
But that the poundage, or I guess that's what it's measured in, is still about the same. So I wonder that 20%, if it's... Well, are there speculations of where was it the marijuana industry buying directly, or was it the ripples of change?
Well, to many people's estimate, there were maybe 8,000 to 10,000 farmers before Prop 64 passed. Many of them were small farmers. And what we do know about the industry is that a huge amount of the money that was made by that industry was spent in Humboldt County on all kinds of things like water tanks and soils and plumbing and on and on. And so what we've done with the cannabis ordinances and the state laws is taken that 8,000 to 10,000 farmers in Humboldt, and now we're down to less than 1,000 farmers with applications that have been approved. Now, there's certainly still a lot of black market activity, although that's getting harder and harder to sell due to all the compliance requirements. So what we know is that we had...
And are their buying habits... local,
know.
Or is there a sense that they may be buying, let's say, Mendocino County and bringing it up so that they're not triggering any awareness?
Hard to say. You know, in the legal market, there's track and trace and all those kinds of things.
That's an easy one.
In the black market, it's not there. But really simply put, we had a broad base of farmers who were spending most of their money locally, maybe 10% in Costa Rica. But now that's been concentrated into the hands of a far fewer individuals who mostly have outside investors. And so what that means is a lot of the income and the money is leaving the county. And the result of that is a drop in sales tax. Which
so it's
also,
kind of a double-pronged
that's right.
impact.
And so what that also means is Measure O, Measure Z money, which is tied to sales tax, also shrank a little bit. So these are very important things. In addition, the county has increasing liabilities through its PERS, through its benefit programs, and lots of other things. And health insurance is rising all the time.
So I know from most of the folks coming through is that it was not seen as a panacea, that this was a year-by-year proposition.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess that might not be the right, concept.
Yes.
Was year-by-year, and that you know, don't bank on it. Don't anticipate, don't hire up accordingly, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Was that adhered to?
You know, I don't know. As you know, I'm new to the office, so I couldn't really speak to.
What sense do you have with some of the early feedback?
I think that there was a hope that the compliance market would actually provide the county with a lot of resources and income. That, you know, when we look at sales tax, that's a big hit, 20% reduction. In addition to that, we're also seeing that a lot of communities are struggling with this adjustment. A lot of the small farmers in Southern Humboldt got hit pretty hard. Basically, there was no pathway for them to become compliant. The cost of compliance was far greater than what they were ultimately going to make. So they didn't engage in the compliance market. So we can see that big hit in Southern Humboldt with KMUD, with the Mateel, with all these community organizations, et cetera. But those hits are happening all over the county in many different ways.
When you reference the 20%, mm-hmm. is that countywide or is that in the unincorporated?
That's the unincorporated areas of Humboldt County, so not the cities. So you'd have to look at all the individual cities. But when I talk to business folks in the various communities, they also say that sales are down.
Oh, yeah, and there's a definite hesitation. May not be fear.
That's right.
But a hesitation about, okay, that's so right. it's happening. What is it that's happening?
That's right. That's right. And then you also look, you know, we also have the Measure S tax, which was an excise tax on the cannabis growing area that you got permitted. And it's the only agricultural industry where we tax growing area. All the other agriculture is taxed by sales. But if we tax by sales, then most of the sales would happen in the cities, and the county would not receive a lot of that revenue. So the voters and the county made the decision to have an excise tax on growing area, which, what if you don't grow that year? What if you have crop failure? There's all kinds of different things.
There's no allowance for that?
Not currently, although there is some consideration about where policy can be changed and or do we need to go back to the voters to make this tax have an appeal process. I didn't plant this year, and here's my evidence. I had crop failure. Here's my evidence.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
We know you love Easy Radio, singing out loud, really out loud, to your favorite songs. But what about when you're traveling out of the area? Easy Radio can be heard throughout the area on 910 AM and 104.1 FM in Curry and Del Norte counties. And if you're in Humboldt County, 980 AM. That's Easy Radio, 910 AM in Brookings, 104.1 FM in Del Norte and Curry County, and 980 AM in Humboldt County. Good radio is easy.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone, Humboldt County 5th District Supervisor. Steve, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the registration and the compliance tax, mm-hmm. I guess might be another way to mm-hmm. say it, for the marijuana folks that are under permit and are legal.
That's right.
I would have thought that if that was taken out, and let's say I decide to plant corn this year, mm-hmm. give the land a break.
Yeah.
I mean, crop rotation is a normal thing.
Absolutely.
That there would have been some kind of an annual registration that says, yep, or one that would put it into abeyance. Everything's okay, mm-hmm. but not this year.
Yeah.
And then when you come back in, you check right. it off, and right. you're off to the races. Is it that simple?
I don't know that it's that simple. This was something that passed by the voters. So when you have ordinances that are created by the voters, in order to change them, you often have to go back to the voters, just like Measure V with the mobile home ordinance and others that were passed by the voters. Whereas when the board itself entertains and passes ordinances, it's easier to go back to the board and make those changes. So there may be some minor tweaking that can be done at the board level, but it may also be necessary to go back to the voters on this particular one.
Well, that would take... I mean, it's not obviously the most efficient way to accomplish that one.
No, it's not.
Now, I was operating under the presumption that those dollars weren't going into the general fund, that those were going into to help offset code enforcement.
No, the Measure S taxes that are the cannabis excise tax go into the general fund. Now, yes, there has been some discussion And I do not believe the board has actually provided any direction specifically yet as to where those funds should go. But yes, some of them have been being used to cover some of the costs of compliance and code enforcement. So one of the things I've asked for our preparations for our budget sessions coming up this spring is I want to have a full reporting of both cost and expenses, both in the economic realm, the social realm, and the environmental realm. So in the economic realm, we know we brought in $10 million, let's say, in Measure S excise tax in 2018. It will go up as the rest of the bills get paid. So we brought in X amount of money. Well, how much money are we spending in the planning department and in code enforcement in regards to regulating that market?
Just the allocation of those funds.
How much have sales tax dropped? And so that we can actually get a complete picture of financial analysis. What were the pluses? What were the minuses? What's the net? You know, what was the net gain to the county after we look at all the expenses against those revenues? Same thing with the social aspects. We know that in Southern Humboldt, they've taken a huge hit socially in terms of the economy, the livelihoods of Southern Humboldt. We can see that in the effect, the social organizations, KMUD, the Mateel, et cetera. But then
based on donations?
Based on donations. All that free money has gone to consultants and taxes right. and fees, and not just the county. The state
that would
layer.
Be a toughie to quantify. I mean, you know, let's say the last year
aspects.
I decided to right. give X number of dollars right. to this nonprofit. Okay, this year I'm deciding to give it to the church.
That's right.
Okay, that has nothing to do with anything outside of the house. It's just
that's right.
We made that determination.
That's right.
So how do you nail that?
You can look at charitable donations across the board. Like you say, there's churches, there's schools, there's all that. Not an easy thing to count for. But
yeah.
we do know that in that one realm of KMUD and the Mateel, two very important organizations in the community, that they've taken a huge hit. There's much less donations coming in. But more importantly,
and that's where you believe most
social.
Of those dollars were being donated?
A lot of
those
them.
Two entities?
In Southern Humboldt, a lot of it. But,
okay.
you know, all kinds of charities, for certain.
That's what I was thinking of. Save the Redwoods League.
Sure. Well,
that's going to be really tough to track.
Epic. Any number of
yeah.
organizations. But the other aspect of the social part of that three-legged stool, right, the economics, the social part, and the environmental part, is that we then moved a lot of those grows into communities like Fortuna and Willow Creek and McKinleyville, where they didn't want that. This isn't the dollar sign part. This is the
okay.
social aspect.
Okay,
part.
So it's not a black and white.
That's right. So three-legged
okay.
stool, which is a stable stool, has a social, economic, and environmental aspect. If we look at the environmental part, we've got a lot of abatements happening. Some of those owners are not paying those abatement fees. There are many owners that are just walking away from their properties. If the cleanup and abatement of a 40-acre parcel worth $200,000 is going to be $200,000 worth of cleanup, people are going to walk away. And so over the next 5 years, there are going to be many parcels where people are not going to pay the tax, they're not going to clean up the environmental damage, they're going to walk away, and the county's going to end up with that liability.
Now, that one was anticipated.
To some degree, I don't know.
Do you think it's more prevalent than what they were expecting?
I think it's far more prevalent, and that there is a massive amount of property with tremendous environmental damage that people are going to walk away from. So no longer will it be just Shelter Cove parcels on the auction block.
Just the verticals, yeah.
Yeah. So now you're going to have something that's not over 200% slope.
So now the county has the ultimate liability with that, right?
I would think
so. If somebody
so.
Defaults.
Somebody defaults, we end up with the property. Now, we can't put it on the auction block with all that abatement. So it's
right.
going to have to be cleaned up in order
so
to auction it.
Clean up and then you sell it for the abatement cost?
Yeah, negative $200,000.
Well, so if it's a $200,000 cleanup, it sells for $200,000. If it's a $40,000,
it's a $40,000
cleanup? I don't
know exactly.
Cleanup?
I mean,
there's no plan for that at this point?
I don't believe that that's really been anticipated and figured out.
And I still, not that it's your area, but I still have great question why everybody couldn't have pitched in,
mm-hmm.
bought the software program for everybody in the county
right.
and a one-time hit instead of trying to get everybody to kick
it's
in that amount.
It's the only way we're ever going to regulate indoor, to be honest. How else do you do it?
Yeah. yeah.
Energy use.
Well, and if it's not over whatever the magic number is that that the state says,
that's right.
it's not worth doing anything.
That's right. And then neighbor complaints are another thing that drives that.
Right.
Where people have knowledge of activity. And
but if it's an
things.
Indoor grow and it's personal consumption, yeah.
Well, that's
now
right.
that's playing by the rules.
That's right.
And I don't know how many play by the rules.
Six plants, you know, according to state law. People can grow six plants legally nowadays.
Per person or per
household? Per parcel. Per household, per parcel is my understanding, not per person.
So the dorms don't get a break.
Well, yeah, you got to be in your own parcel.
There you go. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
Decade of Difference presents the High School Innovate Business Challenge.
I'm Genevieve Regley, encouraging you to go for it and submit an idea. I didn't know if my idea would be selected, but it was, and I learned a lot about my idea and myself. It was a great experience and helped kickstart my business while still attending Ferndale High School.
Learn more at decadeofdifference.org. Deadline to enter is February 15th. Upload your idea and compete for thousands of dollars. It's the Decade of Difference. Be a part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Steve Madrone. Talk Shop presented by Murphy's Markets, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, REDEC, and by CDH Painting. Steve, taking a look at some of the different challenges that are expected, okay, you know, the budget, yeah, you got a pretty good crew. They kind of have a good sense of what's going on. Sacramento, yeah, maybe not quite so much so, but okay, you still get those indications. Mm-hmm. It's the unexpected. Mm-hmm. That's always the wild card, particularly with budgets.
Yeah.
Contingency funds. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine anything that would be more, have a higher potential for emotional battlefield than contingency funds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're asking me to take a 2% cut in my department, but yet you're setting aside $500,000. That's not fair. That's not, boom, and then, you know, the supporter groups all show up and, you know, we have the protests and the drum banging and all that kind of stuff. As you're looking at the budget, is there enough set aside for contingency and the unexpecteds?
You know, I am new to this, so I'm still learning and getting my feet underneath me. But what I can tell you is that there are a lot of predictions for some pretty dire budgets several years out into the future. And we don't really know what the economy is going to do. It's been bullish, what, for 10 years, which is unheard of, kind of. 11 years would be the longest standing. We're about ready to pass the record for the longest standing increase, continuing, you know, bull market, et cetera.
I suppose it depends on where your geographic spot is on that one.
I'm sure it does.
I don't think that's Humboldt County specific.
No. But most economists predict that there will be, at the very least, a recession, if not really large crash.
There's always ups and bottoms.
Yeah. That's right. And we don't really know these things.
Right.
But given the probability of declines in a lot of things in the coming years, now's the time to tighten the belts, not wait till that happens, at least from my perspective. And yet there are so many demands, and that's where contingencies end up going. Things come along that you just don't really have a choice. You've got to deal with them, and that's where the contingency budget comes into play.
And the county has got a little bit now with the ADA compliance.
That's correct.
And I'm hearing 80 million to 100 million.
Huge.
I mean, it's far more than what it was initially shared as things are being discovered.
Yeah.
And the cost of materials continues
to rise.
That's
right. Luckily, some of the estimates have been high compared to what actually has happened. Some of them have been low. So far, we're fairly well on track with the estimates, but it is a huge responsibility.
And it's a long timeline, isn't it, on this thing?
Absolutely. Some of these things will not be dealt with immediately. But there is a very aggressive program. Our chief administrative officer, department heads, and staff are working diligently with contractors and lessees to get everything compliant. Big job.
When there is a surprise, like the floods we had last week.
Yes.
Is there enough set aside? And I don't know if there ever could be, but is there enough to at least address some of the immediate got to deal with?
There's never enough. It's always stretched thin. The Public Works Department do an incredible job with limited resources. And yes, it takes time for those monies to come in, even with the disaster declarations, et cetera. And right now, there are a lot of people that are hurting, a lot of roads that have washed out. People are having difficulty with access, et cetera. Thank goodness the voters supported Measure O. You know, without Measure O, we would be in a whole lot worse place. Right now, Measure Z is finishing up its final year, and then Measure O kicks in, and they'll still keep calling it the Measure Z Committee. We've got accountability there.
I will. I get too confused. Two letters, too many choices.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is the good news there. And the other good news is that the item on the ballot in November, what was it, number 6, failed. And that was going to repeal number one, which was
the gas
tax that is really what's pumped money into these rural counties for roads and upgrades. But still, the backlog of damages and deferred maintenance is so massive. So this is not going to get fixed anytime soon. And I get a lot of calls about roads in my district in particular.
I would suspect that, you know, it's one of the few areas that people feel that they get money back. They get attention. The tax dollars are going towards something that impacts their life.
Yes.
Specifically. And it's tangible.
It is.
You can see, you know, the road's good. The road's good. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
If it's not so good.
Yeah.
But I'm always curious why they call the supervisor rather than Public Works. Not that Tom needs to have another, you know, a bank of switchboards to be able to be there, but you got so many other things on your plate. Why call your supervisor instead of the guys that actually do the do?
Every county works a little differently. Some counties, you as a supervisor cannot call the department head yourself and refer your constituents. You need to go through the chief administrative or chief executive officer. But in our county, the board supervises the department heads. Although the elected department heads, we don't supervise, but we do approve their budgets. So there is some form of control there. You know, what is exciting to me is to see, like you said, there is support in the community when people see that they are going to get taxed, but they see the benefit of that. Measure O passed with almost 70% of the vote. It only needed 50 plus one because they made it a general obligation tax by putting that one little comment at the end of the whole line and other general fund needs, you know, which allowed them to pass it. But they could have actually passed it as a special use tax because it got beyond 66.6%.
Yeah, the two-thirds plus one. That's a pretty high benchmark.
Really high, and yet here are the public doing it. And I would say that's due to the accountability of the Measure Z committee and how these funds have actually been used, and people can see it. It's transparent. It went to sheriffs. It went to roads. Thank you very much.
Faith and trust.
That's right.
It's a novel concept.
Yes.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:42.
Hey, Humboldt County. The folks at Fly Humboldt want to say thank you for all your support. The Los Angeles flight is a great success. Did you hear? Starting May 29th, we'll have a second departure to Los Angeles. It makes it even easier to visit sunny SoCal. What's more, we'll have flights to Denver starting June 7th. You'll only be a few hours away from the Mile High City or wherever you want to go. This will make connecting to the world even easier. Get more information at flyhumboldt.org or email us at info@flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone. Steve, the budget challenges that are out there, planning is out there, contingencies are out there. As far as what the next little bit looks like, what are you focusing on as the department heads are going to be coming in, as the budgets are going to be revised and adjusted, as you're starting to hear the projections from the state, as all these things are kind of starting to funnel together and starting to clarify, what are you going to be looking for?
Well, my big push is going to be on this basic concept in business that we've all heard, that you've got to spend money to make money. And so there's always this tendency to want to reduce expenses no matter what. And I have learned that the bottom line is, you know, if you're going to get that return on investment, if you're going to bring in the resources, we as citizens and taxpayers have all been taxed in a great way. And those taxes end up coming down in various grant programs. As a county, if we add strategic staff that have grant writing expertise and we work with our staff to improve our grant writing efficiency, if we're submitting 10 grants and we're getting two of them, something's wrong. I want to see us getting 7 or 8 out of 10 grants because
what is the average?
I mean, I don't know. So that's one of the things I've asked is I would like to see department heads do an annual review of their grant writing efforts to their efficiency is.
Using your analogy?
Yeah.
Maybe 20% is hitting a grand slam home run.
It may very well be.
Statewide, you know.
But
you got to track it. You're right.
I've been in that world for 45 years working for nonprofits, and I have an 80 to 85% track record on writing grants. And I've learned how to do that by figuring out whether or not a particular grant idea is what we call low-hanging fruit. Is it ripe? Is it ready to pick?
Does it apply and to your application?
Yes, it does. And you can spend an hour or two figuring that out before you spend the 2 weeks on staff time chasing something that's likely not going to happen. And instead putting that staff time into doing the things that help make that fruit ripen so that when you do submit the grant, you have a higher success rate. So I am all about trying to help staff become more efficient through training, help us add a few strategic positions, perhaps in the parks, planning, public works department, to go after all these monies for parks, trails, roads, all the other things that we can be doing and pulling back our tax dollars into our communities, creating jobs.
So are you looking at expansion of county staff or just a reallocation of existing folks that might have those ability sets?
I don't know specifically. I just know that strategically we're missing a couple of positions to be able to do this. And that may be a reshuffling. It may be an addition. But, you know, if you spend $100,000 a year on a position, that's not all salary. That's salary plus benefits plus mileage and all the...
The whole package.
Yeah. But that person brings in $2 or $3 million a year in grants. We're way ahead as taxpayers and as a county in bringing in money to provide services.
You want a little fear?
Sure.
That was the argument I had to get the ball rolling for the economic development position.
Excellent.
It took me 5 or 6 years.
And we've got
it. We finally got it in there.
Yes.
It is an ROI, and it has to be a long-term commitment. If
that's
you can
right.
do it,
that's right.
It's got to be a long-term, particularly because the other guys
that's right.
are out there, and they're doing it already.
That's right.
Yeah. So is there a specialty, is there a college degree, if you will, in grant writing?
There is, but they don't teach these little techniques I was just trying to explain to you about figuring out ripe fruit. They teach all the basic mechanics of it all, but then there's the practical and real aspects of it, which is how do you test ripe fruit? What are the techniques for doing that?
And what makes sense for your community.
That's
too.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And then
also,
it's too bad they don't bring that one into the equation, because you would think that would have to be there.
You would think so. It's just that often people lack the real life experiences to be able to bring that to play. That's one of the reasons I was really well accepted at Humboldt State in the forestry department, because I spent 45 years out in the world doing things and was able to bring that into the classroom.
Sure, you'd think that would be a high priority when you're looking for the folks that
you
are
would
the
think
instructors.
So. You would think so.
Oh, well. Yeah. But at least there was a weakness in the force field and you were able to sneak in.
Yes, that's absolutely right.
Geez. Well, lots of luck. I'm sure we'll keep abreast of this one as the weeks and months go on. Thanks
absolutely.
For coming by.
Yeah, and stay safe out there, folks, with all the floodwaters and the roads.
That's right. See everybody tomorrow.